We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 347 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Jim Hilton, and back again to help me figure out what's good and what's bad about Barcelona right now is Kevin Williams. How's it going, Kevin?
Really well. It's very rainy and gloomy in Chicago here, which is very opposite of the sunlight that's being streamed to our homes by Femini right now, who are wrecking Wolfsburg.
Yeah, so at present moment, it's the 64th minute, so the game will end as we're doing this. But I say that Kevin and I, with a lot of humble confidence, are recording this with the Femini up 4-0. I think this game is pretty much done and dusted in this first leg at the Camp Nou. So again, as we record this, they're up 4-0 in the first leg of the UEFA Women's Champions League in front of an absolutely packed to the gills Camp Nou, and they did score within the first 3 minutes, so it did put me at ease a little bit over an hour ago when they scored in the first 2 minutes to Aitana Bonmati, and then Caroline Graham Hansen, who I know you'd love to talk about here, had her moment in the 12th minute on a pretty good run, just to put that lightly, and then Paredes, a goal line block. It could have made it 2-1, but instead Paredes, goal line block, and Peños, the follow-up save. Then Hermoso gets a third in the 33rd minute in what you consider as the most Barca goal, if you will. A little bit of ticky-tacky for you. And then passing through space. And then the fourth goal was the one that I sum up with the Barca Femini, where the opponent has tried to wave the right flag, and Alexi Putellas says, no, one more for good measure. So that one was just right up through the middle, right between the center backs. It's, you know, it's going to happen here. And I think, incredibly, in the first half, just 54% possession.
That's the weird thing.
Yeah,
right?
10-1 attempts on target. You know, it was expected goals. It's just they attack, and do not let their opponents breathe.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I think that when people ask me how a Barcelona team is supposed to play, I mean, the men have rarely accomplished that this season. Even, I mean, there are a few moments under Xavi where it's been like, oh yeah, all right, that's sort of how it's supposed to look. But Femini, except for that weird purple patch they had about a month ago where they just looked tired and kind of off form and pass not connecting and, you know, things were looking all weird and funky. I mean, they are how I, when people were to ask me, what's Barcelona football? I'm going to point them to Femini. Absolutely. There's no question about that. I mean, they're fantastic right now. And they're hungry. I mean, when you win everything one season and the next season, you're still playing like you haven't won anything. I mean, hats off to the managing team there. They have that group right now in such an amazing mental and physical state where they're hungry. I mean, they want everything, but they're hungry. I love watching them.
Yeah, there's this thing in sports, like the secret of victory, the secret of winning. And what makes this team in particular continuing to be so incredible, and this is now 3 years on, when they lost that 2019 final to Lyon, it's largely, 60-70% of the same players. And a flip was switched. The mark became they're behind Lyon. They were bodied off the ball. They didn't have the physicality, they didn't have the mental edge, the ruthlessness. And now the word that I've been using for 2 years now is inevitable. This team is just so much more dominant than every team that comes in their path, other than, as you mentioned, the little lulls of fatigue they have when they get tired of destroying teams 8-0. And they have really have been going 100%, you know, gas on the pedal. And part of why Luis Cortez, the manager who left over the offseason, was, yeah, this team who conquered the world, won the treble, they still needed a new face. They still needed some kind of change, because to keep up the intensity for this whole season, they were going to need a new voice in charge, which is insane that you almost burn through a manager year by year with largely the same players, but that's what it takes to stay at this level. And, you know, I think we'll do one more point about the feminine, and then we'll go over to the men's, because not unfortunate, but...
Boring, man.
That's the interesting thing about the feminine, is that they're so dominant that it is hard when I ever bring them up, right? Caroline Graham Hansen, basically the only new thing is that when she wasn't nominated for the Ballon d'Or, she kind of admitted, hey, I didn't appreciate that you didn't nominate me, even though three of her teammates were in the top five of the voting. So she basically said, you should have had four or five Barca players out of the five nominees. Anything other than that is crazy, right? And then, so she said that. And then this season, clearly of all the players, like, yes, Alexia still has been the best midfielder in the world. Jenny is still doing her thing. But Caroline Graham Hansen has been on a mission to not only take the Ballon d'Or from Alexia Putellas, but just show everybody that, you know, you've got to nominate me next year. You have to. And that's one of the changes or wrinkles. And then again, I've also enjoyed seeing Claudia Pena and her role increase this year, because again, she's 20 years old and she went on, unlike what, I mean, actually, let me say, what I hope happens to Balde and Nico, she's one of the very, very few FC Barcelona players that went on loan. She went to Sevilla last year, banged in a bunch of goals, and actually came back as an improved, more ready player for the first team, and is broken and is fit like a glove as that backup striker. And it's one of those things that I wish the men's, another one of the things that I wish the men's team could replicate with this feminine team, just even squad management.
So many things. I mean, you know, and for me, my favorite thing about her, about Tina, is she's got a block of ice that pumps blood. She's a heartless, bloodless.
Yeah.
Will, like, you know, rip your face off and just look at you like, why are you in my way? It really is wonderful to see and to, you know, recognize that. I mean, like with that edge that Gavi, you know, brings to the men, every successful team needs that, like, that knife edge player where they're just like, yeah, I tackled you hard, so what, deal with it, right? I mean, it's like, so she's amazing. I just think this team is, barring anything weird like a mental let down or you know, series of key injuries to crucial players, they are set for some time. And that goal was offside by Wolfsburg. There we go, wave that flag, beautiful. So let's switch, I guess, to the boring topic of the men, shall we?
I think the next time we'll likely discuss the feminine. They've got the return leg on Saturday the 30th. And then again, most likely, again, there's, I think, a 98% now at this point on 538 that they are going to go through to meet either PSG or Lyon. And I think most people want to see that rematch with Lyon, because I think that, not to say that closes the books, but it's a little bit of closure. That will really officially feel like the passing of the torch if the feminine take it to Lyon and conquer the team that has conquered Europe, aside Wolfsburg, for the last decade. And so that would be the final hurdle, if you will, to close that storybook tale. But oh yes, so let's be a little more dour. I think instead of starting with the back line, because I feel like that's going to be the meat of our conversation here, I want to start with Gavi, because I think your perspective on Gavi is really interesting. And it was somebody that I didn't speak about really in the match review yesterday. But then the more I considered yesterday and thought about it and saw some of even the metrics on the game, he had, in total yesterday, 57 pressures, a record for the season for any Barcelona player, and the best since Arturo Vidal, I can't believe you bring up Arturo Vidal, but here we are, did it 65 times 3 years ago. He went a total of 14 kilometers, and he recovered 13 balls, most of any Barcelona player. And it would kind of struck me a little bit, because he was getting a bit of criticism yesterday, because very much like the way I criticize, and I put very, very, you know, heavy air quotes on that, the way I criticized Pedri last year, because he doesn't truly affect the final third of the field yet. And at 17, that's the thing that I think it's interesting, because Barcelona desperately need him and want him to do that now, since, and you know, because that immediately, it connects him to the expectations of replacing Pedri, which is unfair to Gavi. But, you know, because he's connected immediately to, hey, as in the Barca midfield, you've got to deliver that final ball. Now, that's the expectation we're already putting on Gavi, but when you look at what he's being asked to do, he does exactly what I mean, any player, regardless of age, 17 or 33 for Tarar Vidal, that's the player that he's being asked to be, and that is exactly who he's being. So instead of trying to compare him to Pedri, if you understand his role is closer to Rakitic or Vidal, then Pedri actually makes a little more sense. But because he is a young Spanish teenager, we kind of have different expectations of who he is.
I mean, so my thing about Gavi is, you know, Gavi has all those wonderful things, yes. But watching him during the match, the thing I really want him to get better at is taking that moment with the ball. Mm-hmm. He plays too quickly. And the thing that, I mean, when we talk about, you know, what Pedri does, right? The thing that he does most, right? And I hate words, phrases, you know, such as la paz, it's nonsense. But what he does do is makes certain that his actions will be correct. And I think that what Gavi does, that lack of, you know, chill that permeates his game, that, you know, he brings to everything he does, he also has when he's on the ball. And I mean, that will go away with time. And I hate to grumble about a delightful young player to watch who's going to, you know, be with the club for years coming, as long as we don't mess up that renewal. But yeah, I want to see him getting some calm in his game on the ball. There were a number of moments yesterday where he, with another just like breath, would have made the right move with the ball, and instead he like banged it away, and it was just, he's hasty. So mm-hmm. that will get better. I love his game, love what he brings to the, you know, team, and we're talking about, you know, degrees of excellence here, really, right? So yeah, no, he's a baller, and that team needs that, right? Because I mean, they're a pretty soft team physically and mentally in many ways. And whenever Gavi's on, you get this sense that they are buttressed by his attitude, that they feed off that pugnaciousness that he brings to everything. And it's fun to watch.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, and I think that's certainly something that is going to happen over time. Not that his through balls are going to increase or his key passes, like the numbers will go up, but they're going to go up because with experience, the game will slow down for him offensively.
Yes.
And that's what you're seeing now. I mean, all of those, especially like if you watch him when he was 14 playing with the Juvenil Oz, the under 16 or the under 17s, regardless of what age group he was always at, he just dominated the game. The game went at his pace and at his tempo. And it is going to take a little bit of time, obviously, you know, just be patient for him to acclimate to the speed of first division football, or especially those championship nights. Because I feel like in those European nights, that's really where Gabby has his least impact, when the opposition are the biggest and fastest and their minds are operating the quickest. Like, it's when those moments are happening is when I think Gabby loses himself a bit, where I actually think in these Liga games, he's been much more consistent. And that's why from game to game, I almost don't bring up Gabby, because he, you know, kind of the base level of what you're going to get from him. And he's able to provide that in the Liga matches, regardless if it's Atletico Madrid or it's Real Sociedad or it's, I'm trying to think of another one where he played well. And I'm blanking on a third example there where he was a standout. But the point is that Gabby, yeah, I think is consistent in what he provides defensively, which is something that Barcelona obviously desperately needed, but offensively that'll come along. And again, it's a bit unfair because the question that Barca is asking for this remaining six matches of the season is, how do you deal with and how do you win games without Pedri? Because via Alfa Jose here, Barca has won 89% of their matches this season in the Liga with their best player, 32 of 36 points with 10 wins and 2 draws. And then only 49% of points without him. That's 28 of 57 points with 7 wins, 7 draws, and 5 losses. And when we think of, and I saw the, once I saw that word, Kevin, my stomach sunk, because the second I saw Pedri de Bencia, I went, oh no, because that is a word that's going to be in my life now for what, 11, 12 years. And I didn't want to see it, but it's different than the Messi thing, because Messi, you know, he got them out of trouble, and Pedri has in 2 different matches gotten 3 points when Barca were going to get 1 because he popped up and got a goal, something he doesn't really do. And he decided to be the hero, be the guy, but he just makes everything work. He connects the midfield to the forward line. He defends like Gabi, but he attacks with the grace and class and vision of Busquets. And he just does everything right to keep everything together and Barca on the front foot. And without them, you know, even Frankie de Jong yesterday, he had the most key passes of anybody in that game with 3, the most duels with 11. Busquets wasn't bad in that game. And yet in that second half, the line of confrontation was way in Barcelona's half of the field. And Garcia and Lenglet and that back line were just completely pinned back as well in their own half. And it wasn't that Busquets, De Jong, and Gabi did anything wrong, but it's that Pedri just has a control over the game. And again, the game, just like Gabi at the U17 level, the game goes at Pedri's speed. And he just controls the entire tempo and rhythm of a match.
Right. I mean, like, something I said today is that the problem with Barcelona is, even when they have the ball, they don't have control. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so I think that when you think about a team having control over a match and losing that control, I mean, you could see it when Pedri went down with the injury. They lost control. And it's something that, I mean, so that linkage player, right? I mean, Barcelona has needed that. You know, they needed it when Rafinha was doing it. They needed it when Rakitic was doing it. They need it now that Pedri's doing it. And right now they don't have anyone to do that. And so what happens is you then have to depend on the back line for too much. And while Garcia shapes a lovely pass, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, it's hard to have the last Barcelona defender who I was confident with the ball at his feet was from Titi before he broke down, right? And that he could drive it forward. He knew what passes to play. He made the necessity for that bridge player less essential. And now, I mean, you've got Piqué, who's in his dotage. You've got Garcia, who makes me nervous every time he moves too far outside the box, because I know he doesn't have the pace nor the physicality to get back and deal with anything and pick up the chihuahua. How can you miss that? So, I mean, I think that the biggest thing right now, though, we talk about match control, is fullbacks. I mean, Xavi was right in saying Barcelona needs fullbacks. I mean, the fullbacks the team has right now are below European standard, and that includes Jordi Alba. They're all below European standard. And until you rectify that, I just don't see that back line doing anything that it needs to be able to do, because once the fullbacks lay out the red carpet for the opposition, I mean, you can have, you know, Christ off the cross as your center back, and he's going to be vulnerable. So it's a major, major problem. And this lack of match control, it begins on the flanks, and it just becomes worse as the match progresses and the fullbacks get tired, and, you know, the farther forward Alba goes, the more acute that problem becomes. And Dest had a moment, and maybe he will, now that he's back from his latest injury, he'll regain that form. But this team needs fullbacks. I mean, the center backs, you can get by with center backs. I mean, yeah, you'd want someone better than Garcia. You'd want someone more the equal, at least in the neighborhood of Big Araujo. But you can get by with that if your fullbacks aren't grim. I mean, the last fullback I think that Barca had at that level was Abidal, right? I mean, am I crazy?
I think Jordi Alba, like, using even yesterday as a microcosm of Jordi Alba, like, Jordi Alba played that entire game with that groin injury that he should have come off the field. But with Balde having been injured for 2 years for Barca B, and, I mean, needs a loan. I mean, he's kind of lost his way and not been healthy, and it's not progressed the way he was going to. Juan Miranda just wasn't really to the level once he hit about 18, 19 years old. It didn't work out for him. And so there have been other examples of left backs having a chance. I mean, Lucas Digne has gone on to Everton, but it took him as a late bloomer until he was 24, 25 to figure out exactly what he was capable of. And he was never going to get that time at Barcelona. But to me, if Jordi Alba played 70% of games and was fully fit and was subbed off occasionally, I think what Jordi Alba can still provide you is fine. But he has been overstretched, and there's not only too many minutes on those legs, but there are times when, especially in the Copa del Rey, when Alba is in second gear, and I think there's so many times that because of the number of minutes he plays and his importance and the lack of competition, that he winds up being in second gear out of self-preservation, because he just isn't going to come off the field for any reason. Because again, even yesterday, who are you going to put in that game? It would have been Dest on the left side. You would have had to put Araujo. Well, no, Araujo went down the game too. So who are you going to even move over to the right back when Dani Alves went out, right? It just becomes a quick mess. And now all of a sudden, Nico Gonzalez is your third, fourth string right back. And that tells you that it's not even to me, it's more worrying, not even the top level of your outside backs, but the depth of that fullback chart is completely nothing. And, you know, one of the things that Barca, I think, always are going to have to understand for next season as Barca, Alexis Putellas gets a brace here. So what Barca and Culés are going to have to understand next season is that I always tell people, pick like seven names of a 25-man squad and maybe, quote-unquote, get them out of my club. But pick like seven of the 25 or nine of the 25 if like the club really has a big overhaul or something and could send guys out on loan or something. And then pick like five players or six players that could potentially brought in, and make sure you put numbers next to those. Because that's the whole thing about like overhauling the squad. Like, Barcelona can't get rid of Alba, Alves, and Dest. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be the young one in Dest who's going to be the one sold. And you're going to have 39-year-old Dani Alves and what, 34-year-old Jordi Alba next season. And so,
and the same problems.
Right. So I got a positive conspiracy theory for you here, Kevin. I think because Barcelona is, what are we saying, 98% officially out of Haaland gate. You know, they're he's going to Man City. It's pretty much done and dusted, meaning Barcelona have dodged the Real Madrid Haaland bullet. And if you see him, you see him in the Champions League group stage or the final. Like, you only see him at max three times a season, which is fine by me, you know, for playing for Man City. Fine by me. I think that Barcelona, because of the full back market, like, we heard Kessié pretty early. And, you know, the other free agents have been known, Christensen or whatever. To get a fullback, you've got to go out and you've got to pay for them. And we've heard Gaia, because he plays for Valencia quite a bit, but he's renewing. He's our club captain. It's going to be difficult to get him. And I think that other than Sosa from Stuttgart, we heard, of course, Grimaldo has existed in the world, but playing for Benfica, he's also going to be so overpriced. Benfica, they're a 1.5 market hike basically every time, because any Benfica player, based on their previous history on the transfer market. I mean, look at even Darwin Nunez. He's projected to go for maybe 20 million more than he might actually be worth. So Benfica is going to be, it's going to be tough. It's going to be really pricey to bring Grimalda. And so now all of a sudden we're talking about Sosa from Stuttgart, and fullback is such a difficult position because if you're good enough, you're not playing fullback anymore. You're going to be adapted to a midfielder. And there just aren't enough high-level fullbacks, not even anymore. But the importance, as you mentioned, of fullbacks in modern football, you've got to have an elite one. And other than João Cancelo, and I mean, the list really does get very narrow. It's why I still argue that Jordi Alba is not an elite left back. I agree with you. But also, good luck naming five better fullbacks in world football than Jordi Alba, which is actually a difficult thing to do, at least offensively and like 25% defensively. But he's still one of the top three offensive fullbacks in the world in numbers and metrics and all those different things and how he affects the game. But yeah, defensively, of course, he's not anywhere near the top 30.
And your fullbacks have to defend, right? And
correct.
The other thing about Alba is he's psychologically soft. I mean, when you get a big match, he's not going to show up. And for me, in terms of setting the tone and setting the mood, your veterans are supposed to be the ones that do that. When the most vital player on your team is a guy whose testicles have barely dropped, you got some problems.
Yeah. I want to throw in a compliment to PK because clearly yesterday in that first half, when Barcelona were under pressure for the first 10 minutes of that match before the goal was scored, PK was clearly the difference. There was a huge difference between Eintracht Frankfurt, the second leg, and Cadiz, and then Real Sociedad, because Barcelona would have conceded with Garcia and Lenglet in those first 10 minutes. Easy. It would have happened. It would have easily happened. But PK was the difference. He gets Araujo where he needs to be and says, Araujo, do your thing, right? And the positioning is correct. He's commanding that back line. And he even, Ter Stegen had one of his best games in a long, long time. And I think it has something to do with PK starting in front of him. So let me just, the thing about the conspiracy, and again, this is me being, I think, the optimist. I think Barca are far along. And, with Barca, a lot of information always sneaks out. But we have seen with the transfer window, Alemani has been a little bit better at keeping things under wrap. We have not heard as many things about transfers, at least truth in transfers, that we heard for Bartomeu's regime, where every player that Bartomeu and his group were going after, we did actually know about them 2 or 3 months, which is easier for me to make content for, but it's also not great because then those market values are going up as Barca is being linked with them. But there's truth to that link, as opposed to every 18-year-old kid who gets a new agent, and the new agent's like, hey, Barca's looking at my client. And I'm like, are they? I'm not sure about that. How many 18-year-olds can they look at? But I do think that Barca have lined up at least one fullback who might be able to play on both sides. And I think we don't know their name, because if you heard their name, their market value will go up, and they're going to be a little bit too pricey. I think Barca is looking to spend on at least one fullback who can play on either side, between 25 and 35 million euros. And that's going to be, quote unquote, one of their big splashes over the summer. But they're trying to get that business done before that name becomes public, when it becomes a race, if you will, before PSG. Because, I mean, PSG is in a point, I mean, in their transfer whatevers, that if they find out, if they get wind that Barcelona are linked with somebody, they're going to blow it up. That's what they do. They're going to do it. And even if they have Nuno Mendes, who's been phenomenal, and they've got Hakimi on the other side, they want to make sure that Barca cannot do business properly, because they're still mad about everything. It's just what it is, even though they took everybody. And these top clubs are just trying to fool each other in the transfer window. So I don't know. Do you think there's any credence to that? I just think I actually have a little bit of faith in Alemani that he is starting to line up those fullbacks. But again, in the same way, when I look at that list of who is an elite fullback in world football, I wouldn't even know who to tell you who they're linked with.
I mean, it's sure. And look, I mean, the thing you have to do is, you have to take a shot on a project. I mean,
that's what Dest was, right? I mean, Dest was kind of, he was the back guy. Yeah, I'm going to defend Dest.
Right? I mean, the thing of, and the guy he was, starting behind, is going to Bayern. So I don't feel like Barcelona values. There is a weird arrogance to me in the way the club approaches the game and transfers, right? I think that there is still this belief, right, that a, coterie of Catalan midgets will be able to outdo everybody in the world. And, you get a player like Pedri, and people go, yeah, see? But they forget that Pedri is a mutant, right? You still need people to be able to stop the ball. when you look at the way of opponents counter, I mean, Barcelona simply, you know, can't stop the ball. They can't. And they can't because everybody is too slow. And you look at, so it's the links are getting stronger and stronger that Real Madrid is about to lock down Tchouaméni. And to think about a player like that, right, in the Barcelona midfield, you know, is just, would be absurd. And the thing is, the club thinks, oh, we're fine, we have these players. But none of them can run and shut down a counter. If the ball, you know, passes within leg reach of Busquets, yeah, he'll stop it. But if he has to move to stop it, forget it, right? Gavi's, when he presses, yeah, great. He's not shutting anything down with pace and or physicality. I mean, you have to have, with modern football, you have to have athletes. And there's no two ways around that. And you look at what Madrid is doing. I mean, they're going to get Mbappe either this season or next. They got Camavinga, who is rounding into being exactly the kind of player I thought he would. And then they're going to quite possibly throw in Tchouaméni, right? And it's just, I mean, they have Mendy at one fullback. They'll have to solve the other fullback side. But, I mean, they have athletes. And so when you look at where they are in Champions League and what they did in matches, and yeah, they had an elite finisher in Benzema, but I mean, their athletes made plays, right? I mean, the thing about Barcelona is they need, you shouldn't need 32 passes to make a goal, and they still do. And it's frustrating to watch because, I mean, you look at all these teams and, you know, Frankfurt ran them off the pitch. Just ran them off the pitch. They got to every 50-51, every physical confrontation. Their counters were fast. Everything was faster with that team. Faster and more physical. And when you look at the kind of intensity that you need to have, and yes, you can have, you know, Catalan midgets doing it if those players are among the best players in history, right? I mean, if you know, but you should need Xavi and Iniesta, Messi, right, to do that. And that's the problem right now, is that Barcelona still have this way of thinking about the game that isn't modern. Yeah. And it's frustrating to watch. And that way of thinking, I think, governs them in the market also. I mean,
well, that's why I wonder, like, what Xavi's role and the conversations he'll be able to have about the players that he wants, because it is really telling. And I'll speak my piece about the forward line, and then I'm going to give you carte blanche on the Dembélé stuff, because I think it's really telling the way that, of all the players that have been complimented by Xavi, and I think it also has to do with something with PR and trying to convince Dembélé in public to renew, but the fact that Xavi has attached himself to the significance and power of Dembélé at Barcelona and just how good he can be. And then you also look at some of the players that apparently Xavi has signed off on, in Christensen, in Kessier. There is a different flavor to the players that it seems like Xavi is asking for and that he wants. And I think the way, and I've heard Xavi talk about tactics too, and the idea, like the way that he emphasizes pressure, the way that he emphasizes his number nine, he wants him to be obviously a goal scorer and a poacher, but not a poacher like Martin Braithwaite, but he wants his number nine to be a poacher because Barcelona, in his worldview, is turning the opposition over in their final third consistently. Yes. Consistently. That high interior, whether it's Gavi or Pedri, whoever that left high interior is supposed to be the other one, basically creating this little mini box of four with two midfielders behind, and then the center forward and the one, one of the high interiors, and the other higher interior coming in to be almost in this rest defense number 10 role. And that is ideally where Xavi wants his forwards and midfielders to set up to turn the opponent over constantly. And so it's not even a poacher that he wants, a guy who can only score in the box like Luke de Jong. No, he wants obviously a number nine who can run on the ball, has some athleticism. But I mean, and that's why Aubameyang has scored, 9 goals in 11 games and is now matched Memphis for productivity here this season. in just coming in January, because Aubameyang at least had the base level skill set and understanding of what Xavi wanted in his nine. And what's interesting is why that quote-unquote upgrade for Aubameyang is still necessary is because if you bring in a player who does what Aubameyang does, and that is pressure, work hard, has some speed, can go out onto the wing when necessary, collect the ball there, and is, again, going to fight, and then also is a finisher. But it's also, but if you can also replace it with a player who, unlike yesterday in that second half, when Aubameyang, his first touch, absolutely let the team down. In no way was he a release valve that Barcelona needed. He just would consistently turn the ball back over, and he was not the player that, with his back to goal, that Barca needed him to be. And he also, again, over the course of that game, we've seen it. In January, he came like a bat out of hell, but clearly his age has caught up a little bit with him in the last 2 or 3 months. And whether it was having been on the sideline for a while, not fully fit, he slowed just a bit, especially in the second halves of games. And it's necessary for Xavi to take him off. So you understand why, if Barcelona can find a player that kind of combines what Luke de Jong gives you and finishes when Barcelona turns you over in the final third, when they've been controlling a match and they have the ball so much more, Luke de Jong can finish in the ways that we've seen the best of Luke de Jong. And then you also have what Aubameyang does well, and that is relentlessly run and put the opposition under constant pressure. And even if he's not the guy touching the ball to get that turnover, he's the one who's leading to the pressure that gets the turnover. And the other thing happened yesterday in the second half was that Barca weren't getting those turnovers. Even if Ferran Torres, Dembele, and Aubameyang, just like that stat with Gabi, that front four, if you will, was pressuring Real Sociedad a ton. But Real Sociedad is a talented team. And I kind of got really frustrated with, I'm going to call out ESPN FC here a little bit for a second. I did stick in for the post-game stuff, and they were really critical of Barcelona in a way that I didn't understand, because yes, Barca were not controlling that match. Yes, they kind of lost the ball. And yes, Real Sociedad kind of took advantage. But Real Sociedad also has a player in Zubimendi who people were asking me after the match, is he a good candidate to replace Busquets? And I direct them right to that 20-minute YouTube video I did about Zubimendi. I think was 7th on my list or something of players that could potentially come in and serve in a role as a pivot. And yeah, Zubimendi is really good. Mikel Moreno has been a top 10 midfielder in La Liga for the last 2 seasons. And we have to give Real Sociedad just a little bit of credit for having the skill and talent on the ball, because I thought Real Sociedad in that first half, and the ref kind of lost the game too, they kicked the living daylights out of Barcelona. But when they actually settled down and were a little bit less physical with Barca, and just, let's say they were more physical than Barca, but less physical than they were in the first half, yeah, they really controlled the match there. Because Real Sociedad, when they remembered that they have the talent and skill to kind of almost go toe-to-toe with many of what Barcelona has. And that's, again, said nothing about Barcelona, but more that Real Sociedad is 6th in the Liga for a reason. They were fighting for the top 4 for the last 2 seasons for a reason. They're a good team. And for Dembele, Ferran Torres, and Aubameyang, you see that, you know, Dembele is the right winger that Xavi wants, and Ferran Torres does a lot of good things, but surely this team still misses... Wait. I don't want to... See, no. I said that because I don't want to argue with you about Ferran Torres. So I'm going to let you do the positive about Dembele. I don't want to do the Ferran Torres thing again. I'm tired of it. But you understand how Ansu, whether he's playing on the left wing or he's at the number 9, or you, again, bring in another player to play, you know, just a number 9, like a sheer good goal-scoring number 9 who's going to be able to run and put the other team under pressure. Those are the two pieces that are truly missing up top to be able to finish things off and relieve you of the pressure that Real Sociedad was able to put on Barcelona in that second half.
I mean, yeah, that's why I reference, you know, being able to control the match, right? When you feed Aubameyang a ball, it bounces off those cinder blocks he has for feet and goes right back to the opposition. There's no match control, right? And you need your 9, right? Your player in the middle to be able to bring that ball down, keep his back to the man guarding him, hold it, and make the right decision with it. It's something that Luis Suarez could do before he turned in what I'll slug on us. It's something that your 9s have to be able to do, especially in that Barcelona system, especially late in the match when you're, you know, trying to ride it out. You can't have the ball bouncing off your forward's feet all the time. I mean, it's frustrating to watch. And I mean, for me, I think that Xavi will have to figure out what to do. My guess is that he moves Torres to the middle once Fati comes back, right? And I think that you have the thing, though, is, I mean, we won't see that, you know, Fati, Torres, Dembele front line next year because Dembele is gone.
Right.
And so then he has to solve the problem of what to do on that right wing. It's not Traoré, who I think his well-used seat on the bench makes that very clear. And people who think that Rafinha at Leeds is that player have not watched that player enough. I mean, you have the major problem that the Barcelona will have is that they will be losing a truly elite winger for free.
Yeah.
And there's no one to replace him. You know, there's no one. And yes, you can say all the things he, you know, doesn't score enough goals, blah, blah, et cetera, right? I mean,
that's not never been a goal. That's not, like, it's function. Xavi,
never been a goal scorer.
Yeah, yeah. To understand Xavi's tactics, you have to understand function so much more than even end product. Like, what is a player meant to do? And I actually thought Ferran Torres was good yesterday when he was dropping into the middle. He would make this, like, looping run from the left wing into the middle, receive, and then his sole job was to get that ball over to the right wing to Dembélé for a 1v1 situation. When he was combining, and he's that, like, almost a continuation piece to Dembélé, because that's Dembélé's function then, to get up there. And then Ferran Torres, what do you do next? You come into the box, and even though he's not a great finisher, Ferran Torres still is the number one goal plus assist getter for FC Barcelona this year, and he came in January. So I will always defend Ferran Torres. That if he is your number one attacker, yeah, of course you have a problem. But if you line him up behind Ansu and behind Dembélé, you've got Pedri in your midfield, and you bring in a number nine, Ferran Torres makes a ton of sense in this FC Barcelona team. He is nowhere a star, but if he is your third or fourth attacker, you're in a good place. You've got a good attacking force. And so I always defend Ferran Torres in the same way that I defend a lot of the transfers that come in, that if you think that he is who he isn't, then you're going to have a problem. If you thought Adama Traoré was someone else that he wasn't, then you're going to have an issue, right? But Adama Traoré, I still stick by it, that he, you know, he has fallen out of favor, but also because Dembélé has been otherworldly since. And if Dembélé still wasn't otherworldly, I think Adama Traoré would be doing an okay job. But he'd be doing what he was brought in to do, which is maybe pick up a few assists, which he had more this season, even in his time with Barca, in a month than he had for the last year and a half. So still, Adama Traoré, I go back to the January stuff. Ferran Torres, to me, has exceeded expectations. I know people at 55 million had a lot of expectations for him, but it does cost, for a 21-year-old forward who plays for the Spanish national team, it's going to cost 55 million. That's what the market is.
Yeah.
And so, but my expectations for Ferran Torres, I think he's just barely exceeded them. I think in terms of Aubameyang, he is obviously far exceeded. Even though he can't hold the ball up, what were we expecting him to do? We were expecting him to help this turn this team around from 10th to 2nd in the table. He did that, as well as Dani Alves has exceeded expectations because he's come in. He has certainly looked 38 defending, but he has brought a calm to that midfield when he possesses and when Barca is on the front foot in La Liga. Dani Alves is controlling and just positioning between he and Alba has been superb, even though physically, again, he just can't do it anymore. And then Adama Traoré, yeah, he exceeded his numerical expectations, and then he found himself on the bench because of Ousmane Dembélé. So all four guys still, to me, it's not one week of poor football is not revisionist history to me. I think Real Sociedad doesn't like completely put them back on the right foot, but talking about the big picture here, you know, as I'm sitting through those 10 minutes of extra time yesterday, which is a complete joke. I mean, absolute joke, 10 minutes of extra time. Also, by the way, if the team that knocks and kicks the living daylights out of the team that is now the victim of 10 minutes, right? The team that's winning is the one that has to play 10 extra minutes because the opposition kicked the living daylights out of them. That's the joke to me. Like, it's like, you shouldn't reward a team for knocking out three of the four players of a back line and get rewarded for that. But, you know, but the big picture is 3 points at Real Sociedad deserve some credit. I know it wasn't beautiful football, but the point was this team is now trying to suffer and survive for just 6 matches more, with one game in hand, by the way. They're trying to survive 6 more matches, finish 2nd in the table, and end this godforsaken season, and reboot everything in the offseason, and be ready to go. And I'm not in any way, for the last 2 weeks, upset about where Barcelona is on their road back to glory, if you will.
No, I mean, I've written this before. This team is roughly where it should be right now. It's, you know, it is what it is. People's get you with my saying Barcelona is a Europa League squad, but they are right now.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they are. And I think that Frankfurt showed that. You know, they are a few players away from being a Champions League squad again. But the biggest change they're going to have to make is the mentality of the squad. They never recovered from that first Frankfurt goal.
Yeah.
No,
which is absurd, because they punched Real Madrid straight in the face, and they kept punching him. They punched Atletico Madrid, they punched Sevilla, and, you know, Kevin, I really did. I thought, you know, I had said that first, you know, that big Real Madrid wasn't a big European night, but to go to their house and win 4-0 was one of the brightest signs that we've seen in a long time. That, like, hey, this they were nervous. There was a big game, and this team had the mentality to go do that. But yeah, then the minute they get punched, the minute they just get nicked in the it's like the old Monty Python, like, where it was just one little nick in the whole house, or like Achilles heel, right? And then just, and then for 2 weeks we're in this doldrum of, did this team lose everything they had? And they did lose Pedro.
And that is the thing. So that's when I castigate the veteran for leadership. That's what I mean. That can't happen. I mean, you know, Frankfurt ran him off the, but I mean, you know, people will let that final, you know, those two goals deceive them. They shouldn't. That match was over. And for me, I think, so what I always think about, right, is what I would do if I was king of the world, right? And the thing I would do with Barcelona is I wouldn't have let Mazraoui go to Bayern. I would have hijacked the Tchouaméni deal, because I mean he is going to cost roughly what Ferran Torres cost, right?
Yeah, I've seen 60. Yep, so 55. Yeah. Yep.
And then I mean I would get Nice on the phone and see what Todibo feels about, right? I mean, so I feel like those three players, right, would cost less. They probably cost about 90 million, right? Yeah. Because you figured Nice would, you know, probably sell Thibaut for like 25, right?
Yeah.
You know, those three players. First of all, you now have a playmate with Araujo on the back line, but you have one who's much better on the ball.
Yeah, I don't know if he'd come back though, Kevin. Like, as much like the interview he did recently, like what, a few months ago, about like his time at Barcelona, it's like, I could see him going to any other big club, if you will, than coming back to Barca. I'm as disappointed as you. Listen, I was a Todibo believer as well, but yeah,
those three profiles would solve so many problems, right? Because suddenly you've got a center back who can drive the ball forward, not via long pass, but via what Umtiti used to do, right? So, but I mean, none of those moves will happen. What we're left with is, and frankly, who is leaving is almost as important as who's coming in.
Yeah.
I think if they start next season with Sergio Busquets as their nailed on starter in the pivot, I'll just throw up my hands, because I mean, they will have learned nothing.
Yeah. And that's how I felt about both the Christensen and Kessier moves, where it's like, I get what you're trying to do, but also, like I've said a billion times, and people, you've seen it, Kevin, like, I feel like I was one of the first people to say this, but like Boubacar Kamara from Marseille is sitting out there, and he's just a more natural six that was almost a like-for-like replacement, and that was my confusion, where it's like, you have, like, Kessier, he does a lot of things, and I had a whole show with the AC Milan guys.
He's cheap!
Right. And they explained why he'll fit. He won't detract from the team. If anything, he's going to add a lot of depth to the midfield. He's most likely just going to take Nico Gonzalez's spot for rotation. So just Nico's
he
probably
should.
Right.
He
so
should.
Nico's probably going to get loaned out, and then you're going to bring in Kessier. And then again, Christensen is like, fine. You know, Chelsea people seem to love him. And then the minute they knew he was coming to Barca, they've really, you know, heaped on him. And he's also had a few poor weeks as well. But like, yeah, Christensen, you're right. That's the thing. Like, Todibo to Christensen, is there a big difference? Not really. But Barcelona, if they had an option to choose one or the other, they picked the wrong one. Again, Kamara or Kessier. I mean, Tchouaméni even disqualified, because I think, like, again, 55 million for a midfielder is something that the club doesn't feel like they want to spend right now. But so yeah, I mean, so it's like they had A or B, and it's like, I mean, A is fine. It'll fill you up. That's the meal. You know, you got a good meal. But, you know, B could have been the thing that you want to rave about and come back to the restaurant for. And I just feel like, Yeah, and I feel like that's what Barca's going to have to do when they lose Dembélé on the wing, too. It's going to be like, could they have renewed him for $1 or $2 million more a year? Could they have bitten the bullet and kind of ruffled the feathers on their salary wage structure for just him and see what else they could do? Because, again, if you don't bring in a Haaland to completely break that wage structure, like...
Which they were going to do anyway, right?
Right, I mean, they were going to do. Right, and then whoever you bring in for Dembélé is going to be Diet Dembélé. That's what it's going to... Or they're going to try to have to do their best Dembélé impression. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a tough problem, but something we'll continue to have to see work out. Again, my conspiracy theory is that Matteo Alemanni, for what he did in January, I at least need to give him the credibility to, even if he has the constraints of all these free transfers, by getting out of the Haaland fight and, in theory, freeing up that money, I am interested to see what Matteo Alemanni does with those quote-unquote funds. And we'll see exactly how many of those funds there are. I think there's about 75 total million euros available to put everything together.
See, I don't know that money really existed. I think that, that money was, Big John bigging up.
Yeah.
I don't think that they were ever going to bring Haaland. I think that once they learned the real number that was going to be required to bring him, they were like, same with keeping Messi. Now we're out, can't do it, right? So I don't think that money is there. I think that, they will have, a couple of value players. Now, obviously, it'll also depend on who leaves. But, the biggest thing is you're losing your highest value player for nothing.
Right.
And, that is brutal, frankly. Yeah. Brutal. I mean, you've got a player who right now you could get 90 or 100 million for easy, right? I mean, given the state of the market right now.
Right.
I mean, his fitness problems have seemingly been resolved, right?
Hopefully.
And he is one of the best wingers in the game, right?
Yeah, and how they handle the Sergio Roberto renewal. So I think, but everyone kind of agrees. Like the only ones that I've really seen defend Barcelona potentially renewing him are the Catalan journalists, or kind of saying like, oh, you can't lose a leader like this. He's a captain. He can play. His versatility allows him to play the midfield or the right back spot. But Kessier was that guy signed for the midfield, and in theory, you keep Dest and have him be the backup right back, or because he can play left back and right back. So if Dest is your third center back. I mean, your third outside back who can play both sides, and Kessier is your fourth midfielder, then you're fine, right? Like, they already have that. Like, what do they need Sergio Roberto for? It seems like his skill set and his role in the team is redundant. Like, Barca have enough guys who are going to come off the bench in a Champions League final. They don't need another one. They need somebody to start the game. So,
It's frustrating to watch. And I think that the biggest problem the club has right now is they have these players who are security blankets and who they can't let go, right? I mean, Sergio Roberto, Dani Alves, if you're going to revamp your team, right, then revamp that squad. And, coming out of a year like this one, where they're going to finish second or third in league, they'll be out of Europa League, be back in Champions League next year. But, I mean, Xavi is... still, I think 2 to 3 seasons away from having this team where he wants it.
Yeah, he's the one person in this whole process that I trust. Like, I still like the way he's utilized players, the way he speaks about certain players. I just think Xavi knows what he's doing, and I think he's earned. Even though this whole idea that we'll end here, but I heard this stat this week. In 30 games, Xavi has achieved a 16 victory at a success rate of 53%, which is worse than Koeman at 58%, but also the lowest percentage of games won since Charlie Rashac in 2002, who had won 50% of games. But it's not only have the games he won taken them from 10 to 2, and he's, other than the Europa League in the last week, he's won all the games he's needed to win, including, again, Real Madrid 4-0, the kind of wins that you look back and say, oh, that was a terrible season. And then somebody reminds you, but wasn't that the season we beat 4-0 Real Madrid at Santiago Bernabeu? And those things are going to exist in the same world. But this team is clearly turned around. Like, that stat, I'm a numbers guy, but also that stat means zilch to me. Nothing to me. This team is completely turned around. And again, like, you can call me some disciple of Xavi because I stood up for his tactics before he arrived at Qatar. But I think for me, it's going to, I told people, talk to me in 2024, then I'm out on Xavi. Like, I think that that's, it's going to take a lot of something going wrong for me to get off this bandwagon, because especially with Xavi dealing with like turning PK and Busquets to a point to what they he returned them to, shows you that if he was able to get his, you know, the sacred cows up to the level that he needed to turn this team around, then certainly if he's going to bring in his new free agents or guys that he's choosing to sign, young talents who are going to want to play for Xavi, I have to wait for development. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to be mad until Fati's been healthy for a year or two. I mean, not even fully healthy, but I want to see Xavi coach Ansu Fati for a season. I want to see Gabi for a year and a half more under Xavi. Then I'll start to hit the code red. I think the more concerning thing is if the team did what you said, and if they just continue to get, you know, option 1B, or, you know what I mean? Like, if they continue to go out in the transfer market and do that, it's going to A, be an understanding that the club maybe financially can't go after, in wage-wise, who they want to go after, right? Like, maybe they can't go after Kamara because his starting number is 2 times what Kessié asked, and they just said, okay, great, Kessié, we got another midfielder, right? We've lined it up. And if that's the case, then still, give me another 2 years for the club to financially get itself right. And that's where we're going to be able to have conversations about proper squad building. But, you know, I'm just optimistic, Kevin. So, final word to you?
So, I think that the biggest mistake the club is making right now is they are letting Dembélé go. I think that's a huge mistake. And I think it's a huge mistake because, I mean, the real numbers are real, right? Real rumored numbers I heard was that the club was at 8 and Dembélé was at 10. Yeah. And with Araújo, they compromised. And my guess is that his salary with bonuses won't be far off what his camp was seeking, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Xavi Ball took off when a fit Dembélé came back. And you can't ignore that. And people will, say, and they have said for a long time, oh, you just love him. No, I don't. But you'd have to be blind not to see the difference he makes on the pitch. Yeah. And so to let that player go on a free, I understand holding the line on salaries, but I think that if he walks away for free, then you have this massive impediment that you have to solve. You know, yeah. Xavi Ball has lost this thing. I love what Xavi's done. My only questions about him have been answered, which is, you know, could he manage a European level team? Right. I mean,
yeah.
Yes, he can. I mean, tactically, there was no doubt. Management skills, there was doubt. Those have been sorted. Xavi will be at the club for at least 3 more seasons, and I suspect that at the end of that tenure will be the best Barcelona that we will have seen since Luis Enrique.
Since 2015, yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh, and that's like, now we're talking like 9-10 years. So, all right, Kevin, well, we're getting there. So we're getting there. So thanks so much. Follow Kevin Williams on Twitter. Certainly he's a great follow on Twitter. Down in the show notes below, hit that. And then we're on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod for me, Hilton D13 for me, rather. And then close Facebook group, Patreon, YouTube, you know where to find us. If you're still with us at this point, you know where to find us already. So most importantly, though, thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. And Forza Barca.